Welcome to the WGBH Forum Network weekly lecture series. From politics to poetry, science to satire, listen in and enjoy.
Some of you are participating in this conference in Second Life, and some of you came today and saw Second Life on the screen, perhaps for the first time, and heard the word avatar maybe for the first time. And I am very excited to introduce John Lester to tell you more about Second Life so you can understand what exactly is going on in there. It's a great pleasure to have John here with us today. He's community manager of serious applications, I should say, of Second Life. And, better than that, it's his birthday.
That was the easiest applause I ever got. Wow. Thanks for the introduction. This is a great experience here. So many different interesting people and so many interesting questions. So I'm going to speak for only 10 minutes. I'll be at the Tech Demo Fair this evening for 2 hours, where I'll be having Second Life running live, and I can give you a first-hand tour. But for 10 minutes, I just want to walk you through quickly what is Second Life and some of the media things that are happening in Second Life. So, you know, what is Second Life? And actually, that's it running over there on the left-hand part of the screen. And actually, what you're seeing is a virtual reconstruction of this Ames courtroom in Second Life, all the way down to the lovely carpet that everyone loves the carpet in here, don't they? And the people that you see there, each of those avatars, there's a real human being behind that avatar, and they're part of a global community. So what is Second Life? The best fictional analogs are really Neal Stephenson's metaverse from Snow Crash and Werner Wing's other verse from True Names. If any of you have read either of those stories, I can stop talking right now because you understand it. But fundamentally, Second Life is a three-dimensional virtual world on the internet that is persistent and multi-user. And most importantly, everything in it is created completely by the users. So from the very beginning, Linden Lab, our company that created Second Life, you know, we decided we don't want to make content. We want to create tools to give people the ability to create their dreams in this environment. And, you know, what happens when you give everybody powerful tools, really powerful tools to shape their world? And it's really interesting because you see the realization of a very waking dream environment. And by that I mean an environment that is not completely surreal, but also not completely mundane. It's somewhere smack dab in the middle. And the beautiful thing about this, too, is because it's a collaborative space, a virtual space that's persistent, this dream is shared with everyone around you so that you can actually create an environment in Second Life that is a realization of your dreams, and then share it with all your friends and share it with people around the world. So another cool thing about the environment is that we give people the tools built in to the software, built into the Second Life client. So there's a very sophisticated 3D modeling system. It's based on geometric primitives. Think Legos, but on steroids. And you know, you can see somebody here has created a beautiful little structure with transparencies. All the tools for doing this are built into the client, and everybody can do this. So you know, this is a fundamental quality of the Second Life experience. You can breathe life into all of these objects using a scripting language called a Linden scripting language, LSL. On the left there, you can see it's a bit kind of blurry, but there's a little bit of code there. It's very much like C++. And, you know, it's one thing to write code and have it, you know, make things happen on a computer screen. It's another thing to create, what you can see there, is someone create a little plywood box and write some code that maybe makes the box fly or maybe makes the box send data to another box in Second Life that maybe changes something, maybe causes a tree to grow. And these scripts can actually communicate with the rest of the world outside of Second Life through XML RPC calls and email. So The scripts give life to the object. So you can actually create something like a car that really drives, or a plane that really flies, or a flower that really blooms. The other cool thing is, people thought we were really crazy when we were saying all these things. Like, what, you're going to let them build anything they want with these tools? That's crazy. And it's like, no, we think this will be cool. We think this will be great. The other thing, a major decision was, in Second Life, all of the residents fully own their creations. By that, they retain all of the intellectual property rights to their creations, and they can do with that what they will. Some people open source what they create in Second Life. Other people decide to retain certain rights. Residents can buy and sell Linden dollars for real-world dollars. We have an in-world economy, and we have a liquid market that matches buyers with sellers. And residents can also license their creations back in the real world. There's a guy who created a game called Tringo in Second Life. It was sort of a cross between Tetris and Bingo, and it became insanely popular in Second Life. And he was actually making some decent money selling this game in Second Life. And he licensed it to Nintendo, and it's out for the Game Boy Advance now. So here's an example of a game that you're playing on your Game Boy Advance that was created in a virtual world. I think that's a first. Not very much emotional bandwidth there, is there? But I just wanted to illustrate. When you see that, what's the difference between emotional bandwidth here and, say, the emotional bandwidth there? In this case, you have... I like the term emotional bandwidth because it really explains why something like Second Life is so powerful an experience. Because you're represented by an avatar, for instance, in this snapshot, this woman was clapping and laughing. So there was animation and sound tied to this, to what you're seeing here, and facial changes. So you get to use real-world social cues and proxemics to make the experience more emotionally immersive. Plus, you have the ability to create your visual identity from the ground up. And again, like I said, animations and sound add so much more depth to this experience. Excuse me. So talking a little bit about media, this is an example of, we had a conference in New York City, Second Life Community Conference, that was actually organized by the residents. We don't call them users, we call them residents. And so anyway, what you're seeing is actually a live video feed from the conference in New York City, and this this woman with the beautiful dragonfly wings was actually watching the video, and you can't really see, but there's another person to the right of her, and out of the frame there is actually a group of people. So you had people watching this live video feed, commenting on it, then you had people in the conference who were also logged into Second Life, so they were carrying on conversations with people who couldn't physically be at the conference. And then sometimes relaying there. Then there were people on the panel. You can see people on the panel. There's a laptop there. So there are some people on the panel saying, oh, someone in Second Life is asking this question. And so there was this bidirectional flow of information back and forth. And the other thing that you can do with video in Second Life is you can just have a shared experience of watching, watching a movie or something, or a video that somebody made, and have leverage the power of being in a community of people that can interact with each other while they're experiencing a video. So as opposed to just sitting in front of your computer and watching a video by yourself, all alone in your room, you can actually watch it with a group of friends, which makes the experience so much more powerful. There's a huge live music scene that's exploding in Second Life. What you're seeing here on the stage, you see a person actually playing guitar, and you see people watching, listening. This is, again, the sort of waking dream aspect, so it looks pretty normal until you see that kind of blue guy floating, in front. It's like, whoa, that's kind of weird. But other things look real. The brick looks like brick on the wall. And so what happens is these musicians at home play music, send it to a Shoutcast server, stream it into Second Life. Second Life allows the streaming of audio streams to a parcel of land. And the musician is at the same time, while they're playing, they have a computer next to them, and they're logged into Second Life. And they're actually talking to people as they see them coming in. So they'd say, hey, Joe, good to see you coming to my concert. And there's this bidirectional exchange. So it's an incredibly powerful way to engage people around the world in a shared experience of listening to music, where people are sitting around and enjoying a live musical experience and communicating and sharing experiences with each other at the same time. You can also create movies in Second Life. Machinima is a form of movie making that involves using video game systems to, you know, it's building things and sets in the real world is expensive. So I'm actually on the set of a Machinima movie that was made in Second Life called Bells and Spurs, and it's in a Wild West set. So that was right before I was going to buy a 10-gallon hat, because, you know, you need a cowboy hat in the Wild West. So, you know, here we can talk about, for instance, this conference extended into a virtual community space. That's my avatar there. You can see this is my human form. He looks pretty much like I do, except he's a better dresser. And you can see that we recreated Austin Hall. I didn't recreate it. There were people working at the Berkman Center and volunteer residents who did a lot of amazing work. But they took photographic textures. You know, they came and photographed the building and then recreated it in Second Life. And you can see here, like, this is one of the views from within Second Life. And you can see, like, they have access to the question tool, so they're actually being able to, you know, have questions pop up on the screen here. And I thought this was funny. I was in there last night, and I came across this guy, and he said, I'm speaking at the conference, too. I don't know who it was. I was in such a rush. It was you? All right. And I said, it was like 1 or 2 a.m. here, and I said, I'm still working on my slides, and they're like, oh, yeah, me too. And I was like, oh, okay, that's pretty cool. I guess I got to go and finish my slides. But, you know, it was sort of interaction. It was just so neat. And thank you for admitting it was you. That's funny. So anyway, I'm just breezing through things here. But I always like this quote by Alan Kay. You know, it took 65 years after the invention of the printing press for someone to decide that putting page numbers on books was a good idea. It's amazing. The essay took a century to be invented, thus it is quite likely that the enduring and serious forms of new media have not been invented. So, I always wonder who's going to be the next Sergei Eisenstein, father of film montage, in leveraging new media in these participatory cultures. And really, that's all I had to say, and I'm exactly 10 minutes. So thank you.